Hello there. Today is Friday, January 10th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, it's looking more and more like a Ukrainian passenger jet that crashed shortly after takeoff from Tehran was shot down.
Iran has denied that there was any sort of missile strike or attack on the aircraft and has said that it was a technical malfunction.
How Australia's bushfires are decimating wildlife. Also ahead, the Grammy Awards, music industry's biggest night, plans a big honor for the late Prince. It's all on today's International Edition. British, U.S., and Canadian officials said Thursday that it is highly likely that Iran shot down the civilian Ukrainian jetliner that crashed near Tehran late Tuesday, killing all 176 people on board. They say the fiery missile strike could well have been a mistake amid rocket fire launches and high tensions throughout the region. President Trump had earlier Thursday indicated as such.
I have my suspicions. It was very, I don't want to say that because other people have those suspicions also. It's a tragic thing when I see that. It's a tragic thing. But somebody could have made a mistake on the other side, could have made a mistake.
AP correspondent John Gambrell reporting an initial Iranian investigation detailed the final moments before the Ukrainian jetliner crashed.
Ukraine says that it wants to have access to the material that Iran has, as well as access to the crash site to look for possible missile fragments and other pieces that could potentially explain why this 3.5-year-old plane fell out of the sky.
The crash came just a few hours after Iran launched a ballistic missile attack against Iraqi military bases housing U.S. troops in its violent confrontation with Washington over the U.S. drone strike that killed an Iranian Revolutionary Guard general. The airliner could have been mistaken for a threat, said four U.S. officials, speaking on condition of anonymity. At a news conference, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said intelligence does indicate the Ukrainian jetliner was shot down by an Iranian surface-to-air missile shortly after it took off from Tehran's airport. Trudeau said while it may have been unintentional, he wants answers.
It is now more important than ever that we know exactly how such a tragedy could have happened. The families of the victims and all Canadians want answers. I want answers.
Joining us to talk more about it and get the latest is VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman. Steve, what do we know so far?
Well, we have the intelligence community in the West overwhelmingly stating that there is quite a bit of evidence that this plane was hit by a missile. What U.S. President Donald Trump and Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau did mention in their remarks about this on Thursday is that it appears to have been an accident. As you know, Lori, there was a lot going on in the airspace over Iran and Iraq right before this plane took off on Wednesday, that missile attack from Iran into Iraq, and the Iranians were obviously on alert for a retaliatory attack, and the theory is that something went horribly wrong, that someone in Iran thought that this domestic airliner that had just taken off, Ukrainian International Airlines Flight 752, was a threat to Iran. While it was climbing, it was hit by one or two surface-to-air missiles.
You would think that there would have been some communication or collaboration between the international airport in Tehran and the military that was conducting these strikes.
Not necessarily. The civilian and military aviation communication systems are quite different, but obviously you would have thought that whoever was in charge of anti-aircraft batteries or these missile systems would have known that that was airspace where passenger airliners take off and land. There's also a question of whether it was prudent for commercial aircraft still be flying in and out of Tehran and perhaps Baghdad while all this was going on.
True. So what's next for this situation as far as whether it be just getting the actual investigation underway or any sort of retaliation?
Well, there is an investigation underway. It is being led by the Iranian authorities. They are talking about cooperation with Ukraine, with Canada, and with Boeing. The president made remarks that he'd like to see the black box, the data from the aircraft, which have been recovered, turned over to Boeing. No indication from Iran that they're going to do that. They've also said to a high degree of skepticism that while they've recovered the black boxes, that they appear to be damaged and some of the data is missing. How convenient, right, if you're trying to cover up something like this. Now, there have been some statements late on Thursday from the Iranian Foreign Ministry saying that they do welcome other nations cooperating with them in this investigation, but there's a considerable skepticism that we're going to have a transparent investigation if the Iranian government is in charge amid very strong suspicions that it was military of Iran that shot down this plane, perhaps accidentally.
All right. BOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman. Reigniting a debate over who has the power to declare war, the Democratic-controlled House of Representatives on Thursday approved a resolution asserting that President Donald Trump must seek approval from Congress before engaging in further military action against Iran. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said the vote sends an important message that lawmakers were reasserting their constitutional right to declare war as consequences of the Iranian General Qasem Soleimani's death are still being felt internationally. VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has details from Capitol Hill.
New details from the president justifying his order of the airstrike that killed Soleimani.
We did it because they were looking to blow up our embassy. We also did it for other reasons that were very obvious. Somebody died. One of our military people died. People were badly wounded just a week before, and we did it.
But classified briefings on the intelligence that led to Soleimani's death left Democrats with more questions than answers about the administration's claim of an imminent threat.
This administration hasn't given us any reason to believe that this is a fact. The foreign policy of this administration has undermined American leadership, cut our diplomats off at the knees, alienated our allies, and walked away from our obligations. We've lurched from crisis to crisis.
While regional tensions appear to have eased following Iran's ballistic missiles attack on an Iraqi base holding U.S. personnel, Democrats said a vote limiting Trump's ability to escalate the conflict was necessary.
If the president wants to use military force against Iran, he has to come to Congress. Any president has to come to Congress. We're not making rules only for this president. We're making rules for the president, any president, vis-a-vis Congress's constitutional powers.
For decades, both Democratic and Republican White Houses have clashed with Congress over the ability to declare war.
What President Trump has done here is to push the envelope just a bit farther by, in essence, saying he tweeted, "This is my compliance with the War Powers Act." And of course, that tweet does not actually comply with the mandates of the War Powers Act. So the president has been probably more dismissive of Congress's authority here than even past presidents have been.
Republicans argue the vote does not impact Trump's war powers.
Resolution before the House is non-binding. It does not have the force of law.
They also say it sends a dangerous message internationally and that Trump was acting within his rights as president.
Instead of supporting the president, unfortunately, my Democrat colleagues are dividing Americans at a critical time, weakening our leverage overseas and emboldening our enemy, the largest state sponsor of terror in the world.
The Senate is set to vote on a similar resolution next week, but the vote primarily works as a way to open debate.
This is an opportunity here for the lawmakers and for the two chambers to go on record, to send a message about what they think.
Democrats say a more likely deterrent would be to withhold funding if Trump pursues a conflict.
And now is the time for us to once again come together and make certain that the president will not have one penny to spend on a war in Iran unless there is congressional authorization.
A threat lawmakers have attempted before for U.S. involvements in Afghanistan and Iraq, but to little success. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
European leaders are also expressing concern over tensions between the U.S. and Iran and repeatedly urging leaders on both sides to dial back the rhetoric. They've also expressed concern that Iran said it will not adhere to the terms of the JCPOA nuclear agreement that the U.S. had already backed out of. Joining us from Paris is reporter Catherine Field. Catherine, I understand the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson actually spoke about all these concerns with Iran's leader Thursday.
Indeed. We'd all been wondering exactly what the British line would be on relations with Iran, particularly as it's always been speculated that the United Kingdom, Britain, is really caught between a rock and a hard place because it's leaving the EU. It wants to have closer relations with the United States. So when Boris Johnson, the British Prime Minister, spoke to Iran's president, he did urge an end to the escalation. And as well as that, he also kept up with the general European view that the JCPOA, that nuclear deal, has to be supported and it has to be in some way kept alive. And that is what we'd all been wondering, you know, whether he would say that. It seems he's said that. And that pretty much keeps in line with what Germany, Britain, and France are wanting to do, which is, yes, limit nuclear proliferation in Iran, try and de-escalate the situation in Iran from spiraling even further out of control, but knowing full well that whilst they are calling for de-escalation, the U.S., for its side at least, is sort of worryingly doesn't seem to be on the same page. And certainly these remarks coming from the American president showing that he's being unpredicted does cause a lot of concern within Europe.
How much concern overall is there now across Europe? I know there is an EU meeting later in Brussels to discuss the escalations. What's the overall feeling that you're getting from leaders there?
The feeling is that Europeans are wanting to use whatever contacts they have remaining with the Iranian government to help that regime to survive, to do away with any possibility of a direct military confrontation, and to find some way of getting the economic situation in Iran back on track. I mean, yes, there was a lot of concern that none of the major European nations, France, Germany, and Britain, had any advanced warning of what the Americans were going to do. So that was indeed a concern. But they are saying now that they do have these ties with the Iranian government, and they do want to use these ties to keep a dialogue going. And of course, France is still very keen to have some sort of credit line set up, as well as Germany and Britain. They want to sort of set up payments for humanitarian and food aid to get into Iran. They want to use all these measures, all these projects that they've put in place to have that dialogue going ahead, but knowing full well that they have an unpredictable U.S. administration on the other side of the Atlantic.
We're also hearing that other NATO countries, including Germany, are pulling troops out of Iraq now. Would you say that's directly related to what's been happening there? And if so, does that appear to be a retreat?
Yes, it is directly related to the security situation in Iraq. For Germany in particular, they're very concerned, so concerned that they've suspended training for Iraqis and Kurdish forces in northern Iraq. NATO has suspended also training missions, and that is all because of security in the region. You have to look back at why these NATO trainers are in the area, and that is because of the threat from Islamic State. Now, NATO says they still need to be there to continue that fight to mop up what remains of the so-called Islamic State, because this is an area where terror attacks that have been carried out in Europe have been planned there. And they're saying that by pulling out for real security reasons, by pulling out, they run the risk of not being able to continue or to have any success in the fight against so-called Islamic State.
All right, Paris-based reporter Catherine Field, thank you so much. Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she is still holding the impeachment articles and wants clarity on the rules of the trial. French citizens are back in the streets as pension strikes show no sign of ending. AFRICOM sends top brass to Kenya to investigate the Al-Shabaab attack. And the Pope is urging the U.S. and Iran to pursue dialogue and restraint. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Australia's bushfires are still raging out of control. Flames have ravaged more than 63,000 square kilometers of land, and current estimates show the devastation that it has caused for wildlife. The animal death toll is estimated to be at an astounding 1.25 billion and climbing. Fire has also threatened a local animal sanctuary, but as VOA's Arash Arbasadi reports, the community came to the rescue.
Australia's out-of-control bushfires threaten the sanctuary these camels call home.
We put up a really good fight. We had 6 hours of running, basically, to keep up with it all going up. Once it got into this bush here and it's taken some of the paddock down the bottom, we thought we were probably going to be in trouble.
Lorene Cross founded the Smart Animal Sanctuary 16 years ago in New South Wales. As fires there roared closer to her property, Cross says she was scared and got desperate.
We got to the decision, the final decision was to open the gate and let these guys all go. So that sort of broke my heart because I thought they'd just go. But they didn't, they all hung around and just had a party here, basically.
She says that animal party would not have happened if not for some neighborly answers to her plea for help.
I put out a call for people to come up and help us evacuate all these animals. And the community just got together and there was floats and people going in every direction. It was awesome. So we just got out as many as we could.
Fire spared Cross's property and some of her animals. But the future looks less promising for surviving livestock.
The impacts of this fire will be long term. It might be a quick recovery. The obvious activity that can alleviate a lot of the problems is a good rain. Unfortunately, our forecasts aren't all that promising for rain.
Farmers, too, face an uphill climb with uncertainty as to what they can and cannot salvage as the picking season begins. Bushfires are not uncommon in Australia, but due in part to a record-breaking heat wave in September, the fire season started early and rages on with no end in sight. Arash Arbasadi, VOA News, Washington.
And you're listening to International Edition, back in a minute.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time.
With David Bandy.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues. Well, after years of growing tension with the press, Prince Harry and his wife Meghan say they plan to step back as senior members of Britain's royal family, quitting their senior royal duties and forging their own path. AP correspondent Jennifer King reports.
In a statement issued by Buckingham Palace and posted on the couple's Instagram account, Prince Harry and his wife Meghan say they've chosen to make a transition to carve out a progressive new role within the institution, work to become financially independent, and balance their time between the United Kingdom and North America while continuing to honor their duties. It's not known exactly where in the Americas the couple would spend their time. Royal watchers say that senior royals are understood to be disappointed by the announcement. Buckingham Palace responded with a terse statement, saying discussions with the Duke and Duchess of Sussex are at an early stage. We understand their desire to take a different approach, but these are complicated issues that will take time to work through. I'm Jennifer King.
Writer, director, and character actor Buck Henry has died of a heart attack in Los Angeles, according to his wife. He was 89. AP Entertainment correspondent Margie Sarzaletta has a look at his career.
Look at this thing. I got no sound, and I got no picture.
Buck Henry loved John Belushi's samurai character on Saturday Night Live so much he insisted on a samurai sketch every time he hosted the show. In one sketch, Belushi's sword clipped Henry's head, and he wore a bandage for the rest of the show. Henry and Mel Brooks created the 1960s TV show Get Smart. Henry also co-wrote the screenplay to The Graduate and played the hotel desk clerk. He played the guardian angel in Heaven Can Wait and co-directed the film. I'm Archie Zaraletta.
Well, two award-winning documentaries, Capture Death and Destruction in the War-Torn Syrian Cities of Aleppo and Eastern Ghouta Through the Eyes of a Woman, Wayed Al-Takab's film For Sama and Faris Fayad's film The Cave document civilian struggle for survival in devastated cities where doctors in makeshift hospitals tend to throngs of injured and dying people. VOA's Penelope Pulu interviewed both filmmakers and has more.
بحلب مدينتي لسه عم صور هذا الشيء اللي عم بيخلي معنى لوجودي.
Citizen journalist turned filmmaker Wad Al-Khatib chronicles her daily life in besieged Aleppo since the beginning of the rebellion against the Assad regime in 2012.
When I filmed everything you've seen in the film. I had no idea that I would do a film. So I was just like documenting all this moment because I was sure that I would be killed and I want this story not to be dead.
Her film, For Sama, is a visual diary dedicated to her daughter, Sama, born in the middle of destruction. Over 5 years in Aleppo, Al-Khatib filmed thousands of hours of footage as a young student, as a young bride living with her husband, Hamza, a doctor in Aleppo, and then as a mother.
Hamza and Hamid.
They chose to stay in the besieged city at a makeshift hospital where Hamza was one of the few doctors still tending to injured civilians, mostly women and children.
I can't really separate myself between like Wad the mother and Wad the journalist.
She says filming everything around her served as a coping mechanism. When she would feel hopeless as a mother, unable to give her daughter a better life, she would keep filming. And when she could no longer bear to film the horrors she witnessed, she would find solace in her baby daughter.
Sama. Sama.
She also drew hope that her footage would humanize the refugees on the world stage by showing how dangerous life is in Syria.
Behind every one of us, there's a story. There's a lot of memories. There is like a childhood, and there's a lot of complicated decisions until they reach this point. And just what, like people, when they've seen the film, they can experience the same situation that I went through.
After 5 years, Wad Al-Khatib fled to London with her family in 2017. There, she collaborated with award-winning filmmaker and producer Edward Watts to make the film For Sama. Oscar-nominated Syrian filmmaker Faris Fayad returns with The Cave, his second documentary on war-torn Syria. Fayad's film also chronicles Herculean efforts by a skeleton crew of doctors and nurses at an underground hospital called The Cave to save as many lives as possible from airstrikes by the Assad regime and its allies in eastern Ghouta, Syria. As in the film For Sama, The Cave chronicles the destruction through the eyes of a woman, the hospital's head doctor, Dr. Amani, in a culture where, for women, wartime struggles are compounded by gender inequality.
The woman will be attacked if she turned to be like a manager. This is what's happened with Dr. Amani. She managed to be a manager, and this is, she was the first manager in the history of Syria to lead an hospital.
Fayad also says that the film documents airstrikes by Russian warplanes and chemical attacks by the Assad regime on civilians, many of them children. Fayad says 400,000 people live underground in eastern Ghouta because of the airstrikes. He says since the beginning of the uprising, at least 200,000 people have been killed in the city. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life.
A special tribute concert in honor of the late great artist known as Prince will be held in Los Angeles Convention Center 2 days after the Grammy Awards at the end of this month. The Grammys celebrate the music industry's biggest stars. The January 28th tribute concert called Let's Go Crazy, the Grammy Salute to Prince, will feature performances from big names, including Alicia Keys, John Legend, and Usher. You've been listening to International Edition. That's it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. Thank you so much for taking your time with us today. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Carl Starling. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
The Voice of America's global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
This is VOA.